You are listening to Packers Talk Radio Network.
PackersTalk.com.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If the Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signings.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.
Rodgers will go conventional. He will do it himself. Touchdown, Packers. Aaron Rodgers into the end zone.
You're listening to the best Packer radio show on the internet.
Cheesehead Radio.
Reach the
get those back.
So they tried to address the problem, but so far, like you said, nothing.
I guess the bright side is it happened early enough on that there's time.
What are you talking about? We're going to talk about the pass rush. You can't talk about what's not
that's
there.
Not
we don't start pushing it. Pocket back against the pass rush. We're going to.
Seats in the bowl at Lambeau will definitely outweigh the demand for seats.
All right, Packer fans, we are back again. It is Cheesehead Radio. Glad to be with you here on a Wednesday evening. My name is CD Angel. You can find me over at Cheesehead TV and PackersTalk.com. And the Green Bay Packers, 5-0. Unreal. Haven't done this in a long time. 2011. Everything seems to be going on all cylinders. It's a fantastic night. We're going to talk to you all about it. We've got a great guest for you tonight. We're going to be talking with Roger Dear. Who is this? He is a gentleman who has written some other books about sports, but has just come out with a book called Green and Gold Memories. We're going to talk with the author live. You can see him this weekend at the Green Bay Distillery Saturday night for all the throwback weekend festivities, which we'll also talk about. I am joined tonight by two of the finest folks in the Packers Twittersphere, blogosphere, whatever sphere. Jamie Snowden is with us tonight. She of Cheesehead TV. And Jersey Albracco, he of Packers Talk and Cheesehead TV, joining us tonight. Want to throw out a quick thank you to our sponsors, Mayfield Sports Marketing. Follow them on Twitter over at Mayfield Sport and Waukesha Sports Cards. They are over at Walk Sports. It is a great night to be a Packer fan. Let's get to it.
Jersey Al and Jamie bring you this week's Packer News.
The Packers up their unbeaten streak to 5 games after a hard-fought 24-10 victory over the Rams at Lambeau Field. The game was closer than the score indicated, with the Rams holding the Green Bay offense to 17 points, but then helping out the Packers with 4 interceptions and 3 missed field goals.
The Packers deserve much of the credit for causing those interceptions with a ferocious pass rush. Packers sacked Foles 3 times, had 9 quarterback hurries, and 12 additional QB hits. Foles proved he was tough, if nothing else, pulling himself up off the turf after some vicious hits. The hardest being dealt out by Clay Matthews' helmet into his chest, while Latroy Guyon hit him from the other side.
The Rams' defense, meanwhile, did an admirable job of stopping the run game as well as keeping the Packers' receivers blanketed with press coverage most of the game. As a result, Aaron Rodgers had to run the ball 8 times, and 16 of his 30 throws were aimed at running backs or tight ends. After the game, Rodgers admitted the offense struggled and said the receivers have to do a better job of getting open outside.
Injuries also became a factor during the contest, as the team already without starters Morgan Burnett and Devontae Adams also lost DJ Raji, TJ Lane, and Nick Perry for the majority of the game. Raji and Perry's absences seemed to hurt the most, though, as the Rams' Todd Gurley suddenly found more running room and wound up with 159 yards on the ground.
Well, as they did with Brian Bulaga a few weeks earlier, the Packers seem to have dodged a major bullet with Lang's knee injury. He stated that he is fine and will be ready to play on Sunday. Raji is questionable for Sunday's game with a groin injury, and Nick Perry has been deemed out for 2 to 4 weeks with a shoulder injury.
This Sunday's game against the Chargers is throwback weekend in 2 different ways. It's the official throwback weekend of the Packers, where the team will wear its new, old uniform, modeled after the uniforms worn in the 1940s. Green Bay has used similar throwbacks in 1994 season, but these have some subtle differences to make them unique.
And this weekend is also the fifth annual fan-organized throwback weekend event. Our own Kyle Cousineau and his good buddy Wally Pingle put on this event as a way for Packers fans all over the world to meet up with fellow Packers fans and celebrate their passion for the green and gold. The event takes place at 7 p.m. this Saturday evening at the Green Bay Distillery, and our guest tonight, Roger Deer, will be there signing his book, Green and Gold Memories. So if you're in town for the game, stop on by and say hello to some of the greatest Packer fans on the planet.
And that was the latest Packers news. Next up is Gems from the Packers Twitterverse.
This week's Gems from the Packers Twitterverse.
As Aaron Rodgers finally proved he's human and threw an interception at Lambeau Field, Bob Becker tweeted, P.S., 5-0 is the only streak that matters.
Rob Demoski tweeted out this tidbit of Mike McCarthy talking about Dom Capers. Dom is old school in every way, uses highlighters and whiteout.
When word
not
hit
that there's anything wrong with that.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Good.
When word hit that the 49ers might be open to trading Vernon Davis and the resulting Packers should get him wave hit the shore, Aaron Nagler was there to remind everyone of one thing. For fans asking if Ted was going to inquire about Vernon Davis, his promoting Justin Pirlo off the practice squad is his response.
Typical response. When Pro Football Talk tweeted that the Giants worked out Terrell Pryor as a receiver, old favorite Packer Ranter replied, LOL, these get funnier and funnier with every touchdown James Jones scores. And that was your Cheesehead Radio Tweet of the Week.
Tweets of the Week. Cheesehead Radio brings you Make It or Break It.
All right. Nice job on the news, guys. Good talking with you again. It's always fun
nice
talking when you're 5-0. Always nice.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. So Green Bay Packers 5-0. We're going to go to 6-0 this weekend, hopefully.
Wait, can you just say 5-0 again?
5-0.
Okay.
5-0.
Very good. Thank
you. Excellent.
Feels good.
Excellent. So
you know we're 5-0, right?
How many
times?
You
know we're undefeated.
How many times?
No losses.
Could we do a whole show
just saying 5-0? What do you think?
We could.
That'd be our last show.
Is it crazy that we could lose one game and everybody would be in an utter panic? I mean, if we were 5-1, I mean, for many Packer fans, we're so spoiled. I mean, 5-0, this is fantastic. We have come out of every game a winner. How many NFL teams would give anything to be close to our record? I think it's just it's amazing. It's fantastic. And yet. And yet,
we have so many problems. I can't believe I ran through this game.
So I'm going to panic. I am going to be the lemming. I am going to be the one ready to jump off the cliff. I want you guys to reassure me that I shouldn't panic. So, and of course, you guys know I'm being very facetious because on Twitter during games, I'm usually making fun of people like this. But it's all for the show. Here we go. Oh my God. Oh my God, we don't have a deep threat. The passing game is broken. We don't have Aaron Rodgers says they got to get open on the side. What are we going to do? We're not going to win the Super Bowl, guys. We don't have a deep threat. Help me out.
Did you know that we're 5-0?
You're blowing the entire segment if that's how you're going to respond
okay.
to everything.
Sorry, I'll play along. Okay. A deep threat is not necessary when you have Aaron Rodgers. All that's necessary is for him to find open receivers wherever they are on the field. Does Tom Brady have a deep threat? Are they 5-0? Did they win the Super Bowl last year? Okay. I'm not worried. Deep threat, well, I can't even say it. Shred. That's impossible to say, to put an SH sound in front of threat. All right, go ahead.
I'd rather have our running game prior to last week and the ability to have catches across the middle and dink and dunk and have long extended drives and have James Jones, who is making some pretty amazing sideline catches. The versatility of Randall Cobb, hopefully getting healthier. I'd rather have all of those things than trade one of them for the deep threat. Because
we have Jeff Janis. Why isn't he playing? He's our deep threat.
Because, he is a deep threat, but in a very different way, okay?
Very good.
Because when he's on the field, he can make some threatening moves that scares the living crap out of me.
When he's on the field, he's not a deep threat, but we're in deep something.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. It'd be great to have that back, but with anything, it's just a trade-off. You're not going to have all aspects of your offense all the time running perfectly. With Aaron Rodgers, Eddie Lacy, and James Starks, we have the tools that we need. They'll get better as they get healthier, hopefully, to run the offense. And we still have deep enough threats. I mean, what deep threat are we seriously missing? Did I miss something? Can Ty Montgomery not catch the ball? Can James Jones only catch it if it's within 20 yards, but 35? No, that just is impossible.
Evidently.
To be fair, though, if the ball is high over Ty Montgomery's head, he does have a little difficulty catching the ball.
He has dropped a few. Legs.
Yeah, well, he does that little 360 spin and runs around in circles. But your point is well taken. Your point is well taken.
Yeah.
We do not need a deep threat is what you're saying.
Correct.
Al, you concur?
Oh, yeah. I think I've already said what I can say on that one.
All right. So I'm going to step back and back. Well, we don't have a deep threat. That's fine. And the other parts, but what, Eddie Lacy, this offense depends on Eddie Lacy taking the ball, crashing through the line, dodging a tackle, spinning off a tackle, gaining an extra 6, 7, 8, 9 yards on every play, and he has not been that Eddie Lacy. He has been the Eddie Lacy who's getting tripped up in the backfield and falling forward for +1 yards. If we don't have the deep threat and we don't have the running game, we don't have Eddie Lacy, we're doomed. I mean, the season is over. We may as well pack it in.
Well, number one, Eddie Lacy is not the sole member of the running game, proven in, not last week, but the week before, that Eddie Lacy can be struggling a little bit and Neo can still run the ball. Neo still exists. And Eddie Lacy, I think, is still dealing with his injury. He's playing through it, but he's not 100%. Let's get through the bye week and then let's see how he is. Also, there's going to be times that you're going to play a really good defensive front. You're going to have teams that will have a good game against you. Not everyone's going to come up short when they play you. There's going to be teams like the Packers with Jamal Charles or Marshawn Lynch. We were able to stop those runners. Good runners will be stopped from time to time. It happens. One game does not mean Eddie Lacy has disappeared.
So your argument is wait and see. Let's see how he's doing.
Let's get through the bye week, get some time to heal on a week off with his ankle, and I don't think he's disappeared. I think we just had a game where we played a good defensive team.
So I should not back up from the cliff until after the bye week?
No, I think you should understand that Lacy isn't going to run for 100 yards every game. He's not going to run for 80 yards every game.
Okay.
It's okay.
Jersey, it's reassuring. It's not quite getting me there.
Are you buying any of this? Are you buying any of this with the lemon?
I'm trying, but, this wait-and-see thing,
right.
Can you help?
Let me try.
Okay, go ahead.
What Jamie says, is very true. The main thing, the one thing about Lacy not being healthy yet, you can tell. You can tell that, without a doubt. But I don't think that's necessarily the main thing. I think the main thing is the last two games, we've played defenses that did the exact same thing. And they did a good job, and they had a good game plan. They came up close to the line of scrimmage to stop the run. They pressed our receivers because we don't have a deep threat. And, they did a good job of stopping the run. Combine that with Lacy not being 100%, and you got what you got out of Lacy. I mean, even Starks came in and didn't do that much. He got a few yards. He probably averaged better than Lacy did, I believe, but still didn't do a lot. You're going to come up against good teams with good defenses and good coaches that are going to have a good game plan, but they really don't have an answer for Aaron Rodgers. There is really no one answer for Aaron Rodgers. What you try to do is take away his weapons and then, you know, hope for the best. But as we see all the time, Aaron Rodgers figures out a way. So I'm not worried about Lacy. The bye week will help a lot, without a doubt. So I'm with Jamie on that. And I think you can take one step back from the ledge. You know, I know you like to be out there on the ledge, so you can stay there. But just play it safe for a week. Take one step back, and I think we'll be okay.
So we'll wait and see, according to Jamie. And you're telling me we don't have to worry about Lacy unless we play a good defense.
Unless we play, no. No, well, we don't have a deep threat. That's the problem. No.
Yeah. Oh, no, wait a minute.
Catch 22.
Oh, this is a vicious cycle.
Catch 22. Which one are we doing?
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, yes, we're going to play good defenses who are going to probably look at what the Rams did, what the 49ers did, and say, okay, that's how, you know, they jammed the receivers, they stuck to them, and then they stopped the run, and that was a good way to try to stifle the offense. But other teams are going to look at that and say, hey, that worked. The Packers coaching staff is going to look at it and say, hey, that worked against us. What can we do to fix that? It's not, teams aren't going to be able to run that same defense on us week in and week out without the Packers making any adjustments, but Rodgers making an adjustment to make a change there.
I fully expected an adjustment during the game. I was calling for them to put Cobb and or Montgomery in the backfield to give them some space to operate in and to just throw a completely different look at the 49ers game plan and see how they handle that, but it wasn't done. I have a feeling you're going to see that this week. I think that's the answer of how you beat that, how you beat press coverage and everybody in the box like that to get your receivers open. The other way you would do that, but it's something the Packers don't do, is you use bunch formations. I don't know why, but I don't know that I can ever remember McCarthy putting a bunch formation out there where other teams do it as a way to beat press coverage. Something that's always bothered me and always wondered about, but in any case, there are ways to offset that, and absolutely they should and hopefully will make adjustments.
Okay.
You're not feeling that much better, I take it.
So I shouldn't worry about the deep threat because we have Aaron Rodgers. I shouldn't worry about Eddie Lacy because we have Aaron Rodgers. So good. So we're 2-2.
So good.
Yep.
And we're 5-0.
Aaron Rodgers threw two interceptions at home, Lambeau Field. He is not the same quarterback. Do you realize he went from 2 weeks ago against the Chiefs, he had a 138.5 quarterback rating. Against the 49ers, he actually went under 100. He had a 99.0. He had an 82.8. That is Brett Favre territory. Two touchdowns, two interceptions.
That's huge.
Our offense is broken. I mean, if we don't have a deep threat and we don't have a running back and now we have a quarterback who does nothing but throw interceptions, we're doomed. We may as well end the season now. Just tank it, go home. We're done. Stick a fork in us.
Show over. See you all next year.
Could someone tell me if we're 5-0, please?
We're 5-0.
So what's going on? Is Aaron Rodgers no longer an elite quarterback?
All of this
what's
stuff
going
is going on. People are going crazy over nitpicking things like this when the team is undefeated.
Because when you're undefeated, you have that luxury.
It is kind of the point of the whole segment. But anyway, tell me why should we not panic about Aaron Rodgers?
Because he was eventually going to throw an interception. Every throw he completed that wasn't an interception, I felt like we just got one step closer to an interception. Because that's what happens. Balls get hit. Receivers don't run the right routes. You're trying to push it and you overthrow it. That's what happens. That's why the Packers get interceptions. That's part of being a quarterback. It was going to happen eventually. Now at least we don't have to hear about, oh, it's been so many games, and then we all collectively knock on wood. It's done. He's thrown two interceptions in 5 games. I think we should all be okay with that.
I have to say, Jamie, I love when you slow down your speech like you're talking to a 2-year-old to help CD along.
If I'm the 2-year-old on the cliff.
Be fine.
He's on a cliff. You know, like on the edge of it. I don't want any sudden movement to throw him off.
I think it's very effective.
You know, breathe in, breathe out. This is the yoga in me. You know, you got to stay calm, keep nice, even, steady pace, Aaron Rodgers will be fine. I believe he would call this relax.
Toes blossoming. Okay, I can do this. Got it. All right. So I didn't even have to have Jersey. I'll chime in on this one. So we're okay because, you know, yeah, we don't have a deep threat. We might struggle a little bit, but it's fine because we have Aaron Rodgers. And we don't have Eddie Lacy all the time because we might face a good defense, but it's okay because we have Aaron Rodgers. And Aaron Rodgers may throw interceptions, and it's fine, and we'll still be okay because our defense is playing incredible. This is not the same Green Bay Packers defense that we've seen for the last 4 or 5 years. So now I'm scared, and I'm on the cliff, because what if our defense doesn't start, goes back to the old fire capers ways? Is this defense for real, and can they keep it up throughout the entire season? Are they for real?
Well, I think one of the hugest differences, and that's pun intended, is B.J. Raji this year. I've been as big a critic of him as anybody through the years, especially for what I perceive as, sometimes lack of effort on his part. But that's been a completely, completely different story this year around. What he does in the middle there, if you watch the film of the first few games, what he did in the middle to help them stop Jamal Charles and Lynch, it was just unbelievable how many people he was taking on and how much penetration behind the line of scrimmage he was getting, just totally disrupting the running back's lane. If we have him back, hopefully, his groin injury is not too bad, I'm pretty confident about this defense. And we've got some fast guys on the outside now. You know, we've got up-and-coming Jayrone Elliott. We've got Nick Perry actually started looking pretty decent before he got injured again. We've got other guys that can fill in that have some speed now at the linebacker spots. So it's a very different-looking defense, and it's given Capers an opportunity to use those chess pieces like he really couldn't before. So I'm feeling pretty good about the defense overall, I have to say.
I am as well, because I think in any game, in any season, there's an ebb and a flow. There's going to be drives where the other team just does have good drives and, you know, completes passes in a row and gets a little, you feel like they start to get momentum. But so far, the Packers this year haven't let that swing affect them. The defense stands pat, and I feel like it's a huge difference from previous seasons. We've always tried to be opportunistic on interceptions and turnovers and try to say, okay, bend but don't break. The defense kept breaking so much. Or once they did break, it was the dam, and then they couldn't stop any play. But this year, it really seems, okay, we got beat on this really long pass play, and everyone shows up the next play like ready, like it didn't happen. You know, they're ready to keep fighting. They're not defeated by it. And I feel like that change in mentality has really helped that affect the tackling and wrapping people up, the ball hawking, the rush to the ball, and just the ferociousness of the defense. And so I think they're for real, because it's not just some lucky plays. It's not just one person really is working together as a whole.
Yeah, and I think also people feed off of a couple of those players, you know, like a Mike Daniels, like a Clay Matthews. You know, you put those guys in positions where they can cause some havoc, and it kind of gets contagious, I think. The other guys start to feel it. And it is a very different feeling defense this year. You know, in the past, sometimes you almost thought they were a little too tame at times. But with Matthews being put all over the field and put in a position where he can influence plays more often, and Daniels just keeps getting better every year, and we know he brings it. I think the rest of the guys feed off of that. Ha-Ha has brought in a nice aggressiveness, you know, since he's been in. So I think it's a different tone to our defense, and one that basically is needed to play good defense in the NFL.
Definitely. I mean, you can see it. You would see it last year. Someone gave up that big play. It was, and it's kind of the hand stuff and, whatever. Okay. This year, people have given up plays. People have made mistakes. Look at Sam Shields week one.
Oh, yeah.
And he'll turn it around the next drive, the next play, and make up for it. Look at Rollins on Sunday. The pick six, it's great, and then gave up the pass play later. But then he comes back and turns it around. It's that mentality change that I really think is affecting it. I mean, if it was just one or two guys, like I said before, who were just having lights out years, a little bit more nervous. But, I mean, you didn't even mention Clay Matthews. And so we haven't even mentioned Peppers, you know. We could keep going on the defense.
Yeah. Yep.
But
I just want to say, guys, thank you very much. I think I'm going to back away from the cliff.
You're safe. You
okay? Yeah, I am. You know, I think the Packers are 5-0. I wish someone would have mentioned this earlier. But now we know that they're 5-0. Yeah, and we should be 6-0. Yeah. So, speaking of which, I think it is time to get to our very special guest here on Cheesehead Radio.
Cheesehead Radio. Special guest.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, right here in the Cheesy Studio, we have Green Bay Packers author Roger Deer. He has his latest endeavor. It is Green and Gold Memories, and you can find it on Amazon, hopefully, because I think it sold out yesterday. A really, really great book talking about his memories of the Lombardi era and talking with some folks there, too, that were involved in those times. Great read. You can also see him at the Green Bay Distillery Saturday night from 7 to 9 as part of Throwback Weekend. But for a special treat for you guys, we have him right here, right now. Roger, how are you doing tonight?
Pretty good, CD. Hello, Jamie, and hello, Jersey Al.
Hey, Roger. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you. Good to be here.
Look, he knows who you guys are. You guys are famous. Anyway, Roger, let me start you off here. First of all, give me some of the background of this book. Lombardi era is always going to be a special place for Green Bay Packer fans, a special era, probably nothing that's ever going to happen again. It really was kind of a once in a millennium kind of thing. What are your memories of that era, and how did that, I guess, go into the making of this book?
Well, my dad played for the Green Bay Bobcats. It was a semi-pro hockey team that started up during the winter of 1958-59, and we were living in International Falls at the time. So that's how we got to Green Bay. And the book essentially is all about growing up in Vince Lombardi's Green Bay. Now, what makes this book unique, I think, we've had, you know, been a lot of stuff written on Lombardi, and deservedly so, but most, if not all, of those writers lived outside of town. So it was kind of an outside-looking-in perspective. This book is an inside-out view of Green Bay during the Lombardi era. Now, he was, he was a big deal in town back then, the most dominant personality in Green Bay for 9 years. There's four things in this book that I think will really intrigue Packer fans. Paul Mazzolini was among Lombardi's first friends when Lombardi arrived in Green Bay. And Paul Mazzolini ran a service station, Paul's service, standard service on South Broadway. It's long gone now. But I got to know Paul later in his life, and he told me a lot of stories about when he hung around with Vince Lombardi. And those stories have never seen the light of day, and they're in this book. My friends Joe and Greg Lemerand and I used to wander the neighborhoods looking for where Packers lived, all the heroes of the those 1960s teams. And our MO was not to wait outside the practice field because there were a lot of kids getting autographs, and a lot of times those autograph seekers got turned on. What we would do was find out where they lived, and then knock on their doors at night. And some of our conversations with those Packers are in here. For example, one night we knocked on Bob Long's door. Bob was a wide receiver, and he had just sustained a knee injury. But I liked him. He was my favorite player at the time. We were 10 years old. So we find out where he lives, and he lived in an apartment building. We knocked on his door. We're all very nervous. But he invites us in his apartment. He's having dinner with a lady friend, and he invites us to sit down and have dinner with him. And we were on top of the world. There's also a lot of Chuck Mercine in the story, especially in 1967, Chuck's big year in Green Bay. And I detail how Chuck got to Green Bay. We talk about the 67 season. He was the hero of the Ice Bowl. And he has really disconcerting way, the way he parted with the Packers. It involved Phil Bengtson, finding him at a bar, a place called My Brother's Place. It was a raid, and he docked Mercine's pay, and Mercine got into his doghouse, and long story short, he exited. And then the other thing is an ID of the town. After the ice bowl, some teenager ran up to Lombardi. As Lombardi was hustling off the field, he was wearing a fur hat, and this kid ripped it off his head and made a getaway. Well, he got caught, and Lombardi got his hat back, and Lombardi hit him on the side of the head. So that gentleman's identity has never been known for 48 years, and it took me a long time to find this guy, but I found him, and his story's in my book. So if any of your listeners want to see what this is all about, this hat-swiping incident, just go to YouTube and type in Lombardi fistfight. Fistfight is all one word, Lombardi fistfight. And you'll see the kid taking the hat, and it's really quite entertaining. Quite entertaining.
Awesome.
I'm writing
excellent.
That down right now. Lombardi fist. Okay.
So okay, Roger.
Go ahead, Jamie. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh no, I was going to ask you to share. I read a couple of the opening pages of your book today on Amazon, and I was wondering if you'd be willing to share the Santa Claus story with our listeners, because I thought that was really cool.
Oh yes, my middle brother Pat he's 3 years younger than me. He got we were outside our apartment building, and he got hit by a car, a Ford Ranchero. It was kind of an odd car. It had a looked like a car in front and a pickup truck in back. But fortunately, Pat was not injured severely. He just had a bruised hip. A couple nights later, we get a knock on the door. My dad was at hockey practice. We get a knock on the door, and this huge Santa Claus figure is at our door and tells my mother that he heard that some little boy got hit by a car. So he comes in and greets Pat and gives him a few gifts and tells me to be a good boy, maybe he knew something, and he left. And this gentleman, his name was Ted Fritsch. Now, Ted was a Packers player in the 1940s, and in the 1944 championship game, and I found this out in research, Ted scored both touchdowns in the Packers' 14-7 win over the Giants in the NFL championship game at the Polo Ground. And there's a picture of Ted and Curly Lambeau in the book that I've never seen before. I had to pay the Associated Press a little bit of money for rights to publish it, but it's a beautiful picture. And so there's a lot of little stories about growing up in Vince Lombardi's Green Bay like that in the book, and I'm sure your readers will enjoy it. Your listeners.
I just think that's so cool that a Packers player dressed as Santa and came to your house. Like, that would blow everyone's mind if that happened today.
Oh, it certainly would. Jamie, one of the things that is a little bit understated in the book is the fact that Packer players lived among us. We lived in a regular neighborhood, middle class neighborhood, and within a half a mile of the Lemerant house and my house, there must have been six or seven Packers living there. Boyd Dowler lived on South Fifth Street for several years, and you could walk by, he'd be out there mowing his lawn. But it was, so in a lot of these guys had jobs in the off season. But it was so neat. Those Lombardi Packers truly were our team because we knew them.
Roger, growing up a Packers fan in New Jersey in the 60s and 70s, I didn't have any firsthand knowledge of Green Bay, just what I saw on television, and you would always see these descriptions of Green Bay being a ghost town on game days since the stadium held more people than the population of the whole town. Stores would close down. No one would be seen on the streets, they would say. Is all of that accurate?
Well,
was it exaggeration?
I think it's even more so now. I think the town does shut down for home games, at least, and probably when they're playing on the road as well. But back then, there was little difference. When the Packers were still taking trains, people would line the railroad tracks for miles with torches you know, to greet the team when they came home. And when air travel came into vogue, there would be thousands of people out at the airport greeting the Packers after big games, after championships won and stuff like that. So, you know, they were large figures in our town. But the largest figure was Vince Lombardi. And when you think, just think about what this man accomplished. He coached there for 9 years. In a seven-year span, the Packers won five NFL championships, including two Super Bowls. So there'll never be another dominant era like that again in the NFL. Not the way the rules are laid out today.
Certainly.
Just a fantastic, resilient. They played with such energy that the energy was built on faith, and I think on the desire to please their head coach.
Okay, Roger, the NFL has changed a lot. You kind of just referenced this a lot since the Lombardi days. What is one change that you think has improved the game, and what's one you wish that you could get them to undo?
Good questions, Jamie. I think moving the hash marks on the field closer together, back in the day they were quite spread out. So sometimes you had offensive plays, started on the right hash mark. You didn't have much playing field on the right side, so everything was kind of skewed to the left. I think that's one thing that's improved it. Also, moving the goalposts back to the end line instead of the goal line. I think it saved a lot of hurt bodies. So those are the changes that I think have been good. I don't recall back in the Lombardi era that there were these big love fests after the game ended between opposing players. You know, I'm sure players congratulated each other, but some of the rivalries ran deep and hard, and they were bitter. Some of the clashes the Packers had with their big rival in the 60s, the Baltimore Colts, were just vicious battles. Don Shula, just an up-and-coming coach, and I detail how well Shula coached against all the other opponents in the time that he and Lombardi were coaching together. But when he faced Lombardi, Lombardi owned him. And it must have just grated on some of these guys. I think there was no free agency, and there were not a lot of trades made in the 60s. So if you were drafted by the Packers or the New York Giants or the Philadelphia Eagles, you were going to be with the Eagles for the rest of your career. So I think teams were tighter back then, I think the rivalries were a little bit more intense than they are today.
Okay, thanks. Hey,
Roger, my boyhood idol and the main reason I became a Packers fan was Bart Starr. So much has been written about Starr, the man. Have you ever had any interactions with him, or maybe have a Starr Lombardi story to share?
Well, I do have a Bart Starr story. In 1965, my dad, the Green Bay Bobcats, were going to Europe and to the Soviet Union to play an exhibition tour, and Bart Starr was watching my dad's team practice. My dad came off the ice and told me that Bart Starr was up there. Why don't you get his autograph? Well, I was 9 years old at the time, and he had a big entourage around him. They were just standing along the railing. And I tried for an hour to muster up the courage to go approach him and ask for an autograph, but I never did. But Chuck Mersine says that Bart Starr had complete command in the huddle, and you didn't question any call he made because you knew it was the right call. And Mersine is just effusive with what kind of a leader Bart Starr was. So it's a regret in my life that I didn't approach Bart Starr and shake his hand or give his autograph. But you know, there's been some pretty good quarterbacks on the Packers before Starr. Arnie Herber was a big thrower in the 30s. And we had Starr, we had Favre, and Aaron Rodgers. And of those four, If I was a football player, I would have wanted Bart Starr as my quarterback. I mean, they were all accomplished in their own eras. They dominated their eras. But Bart Starr was just, what a name for a quarterback. Bart Starr.
Right? Like Hollywood picked the name, right?
That's right, yeah.
All right.
Okay, Roger, I no longer live in Wisconsin. So whenever someone walks by my cubicle at work and see all the Packer things I have decked out, they always go, "Packers, why?" My response is very simple. I'm from Wisconsin, which to me seems like a very straightforward answer because to me, being born there, that's just was my birthright. That's how I connected with my friends, my family. That's just how I lived my life. Wisconsin and Packers were so intertwined. And I've found in the other cities that I've lived, it doesn't seem to be the same. And so I was wondering, how for you was it growing up as a Packer fan, and how was your community kind of intertwined that way? And now still living in Green Bay, does that same sort of community still exist, in your opinion?
Well, I live 1 hour south of Green Bay nowadays. I live in Oshkosh, on Lake Winnebago, and you may know where it is. I often tell my Packer friends, I lived in Minnesota for a good length of time. There's a fellow over there by the name of Mike Simpson, who's a huge Packer fan, just like you and just like me. And I once told Mike Simpson, once you become a Packer fan, you can never be anything else. And I truly believe that. The Packers, you know, the Packers are the smallest franchise in the NFL. They likely will always be the smallest franchise. And it's always been David going up against a Goliath. It was so great to watch the Packers knock off the New York Giants or Philadelphia or Baltimore, the bigger cities. And the guys that we had, the Lombardi's Packers, were special to us because, as I said earlier, they lived among us. They talked to us. They interacted with us. My friend Joe Lemeron and his brother Greg used to walk to St. Agnes School, and they'd walk by Ron Kostelnik's house every day. Ron Kostelnik was a defensive tackle. You probably have not heard of him, but he was great when he was with Lombardi. So you know, we saw these guys every day, and you know, it's tough not to fall in love with athletes that you see in your neighborhood when you're watching them on television on weekends. And one of the things, Jamie, if I can step back a little bit, back in Green Bay in the 1960s, this is one change that has been made that has been really beneficial. There was a thing called a blackout rule. Pete Rozelle had convinced Congress that the NFL, to survive, needed to not show home games to guarantee ticket sales for full attendance. And even though the Packers were sold out for years, we couldn't watch games when they were played in Green Bay. When they played in Milwaukee, as they did, with the mostly a 14-game schedule starting in 61, there was three home games in Milwaukee and four in Green Bay. So it was always nice to be able to watch the home games in Milwaukee. But that's one thing that always bugged me, that we couldn't see the Packers when they on television when they played at home.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, we have been talking with Roger Deer, and he is the author of Green and Gold Memories, which is available on Amazon.com. We'll be able to see him this weekend. We'll talk about that in a moment. But, Roger, one last question for you before we let you go tonight and see you this weekend. According to the book description, you have several lesser-known Vince Lombardi stories in this book. Can you give us a quick story as a teaser that is going to make people just fly over to Amazon and start ordering this book?
Before they do that, I should say that the publishers had such unexpected success with the book that they ran out of books. And so I've been told that books will also be available by this weekend or early next week. So, I appreciate the plug, but if you want to buy the book on Amazon, start looking this weekend. It's just Green and Gold Memories. I'll tell you the story of the first time that Paul Mazzolini met Vince Lombardi. Now, Paul used to service the automobiles of several Packer coaches, administrators, and some players. And Paul was returning Jack Vanisi's automobile, The Packard offices used to be on the east side of town. And he was returning Jack Vanisi's automobile. And Lombardi had just started, just got hired as coach. And Jack asked Paul if he wanted to meet the new coach. Paul said, sure. So Vanisi took him into Vince's office. And Lombardi liked the fact that he was Italian. And they shook hands. And Jack Vanisi explained to Vince that Paul takes care of a lot of coaches' cars. And Lombardi said, well, here are the keys to my car. Why don't you tune it up for me? And Lombardi told him, if something goes wrong with the car, it'll be your fault. And he stuck his finger right in Paul's chest. And Paul said, all right, coach, I'm happy to do that. But if it runs out of gas, it'll be your fault. And he stuck his finger right in Lombardi's chest. And Lombardi roared with laughter. They shook hands. They called each other paisans. So that's how the friendship started.
That's a great story.
That is.
That is fantastic. All right, Roger, I got to apologize because I've just been told on Twitter by your brother that I've been mispronouncing your last name. It's Dyer. Is that correct?
That's correct. Just think of Dyer Straits, but it's
exactly.
All right.
I do often. So anyway, Roger Dyer is the author of Green and Gold Memories. Right after you Google Lombardi fistfights, you need to Google Green and Gold Memories and check that book out. It's fantastic. You will see Roger this weekend if you come to Green Bay. Head over to the Green Bay Distillery. That's right over by Lambeau Field, about a block or two away. He'll be there this Saturday night from 7 until 9. I'm sure he's got plenty more stories where that came from. But, Roger, I just got to say a huge thank you. Huge, huge thank you for joining us tonight on Cheatshead Radio.
Well, CD, thank you very much for having me. And Jamie and Jersey Al, it's been nice talking to both of you. And, have a good evening.
All right.
Likewise.
Thanks, Roger.
You too.
All right. Go Paco. Good night.
That was a great story.
That was a lot of great stories all wrapped up in a nice little visit. That was fantastic.
I had a great visual of Lombardi sticking his finger in the guy's chest and looking him in the eye and saying, it's going to be your fault. That was a great visual there.
Fantastic. Any details we want to do? I was hoping Kyle was going to join us tonight and at least get us an on the ground, but we do have Throwback Weekend. Throwback Weekend 5 is going to be this upcoming weekend. It's a little scaled back, but I think that makes it a bit more intimate. It's going to be starting this Saturday night. There's space reserved at the Green Bay Distillery. It's a tweet-up. If you don't know what a tweet-up is, it's pretty awesome. It's going to start around 7 o'clock and go as late as we can. Bring your own money for drinks and things like that, and you're going to meet a lot of people, especially if you're a part of the Packer Twittersphere. Twitterverse. Sorry. Twitterverse. I get those so confused.
Twitterverse.
Yeah. I mean, it's great to meet these people that you end up conversing with quite a bit on Twitter and to have them all there and shake hands and break some bread and have a drink together. It's really fantastic. We're also planning on having a couple of our local beat writers are there. I'm pretty sure Wes Hodkowitz, longtime friend of the show and writer for the Green Bay Press Gazette, is going to be there. Who else did we hear was going to be there among our beat writers?
I think he said possibly Jason Wilde and somebody else. I don't remember now.
I don't remember either.
Yeah, it might be Domofsky or whoever knows.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Rob usually comes, yeah.
Yeah, Rob Domofsky will be there from ESPN. Don't worry if you don't have a ticket. First of all, if you're lucky, someone will find you a ticket. But, I mean, it's just great to come. And a lot of the people that end up going will just hang out right there in the bar. You can watch the game there. I know after the game, they're planning on getting over at the bar. One thing is a suggestion to go see the Glam Band, which is a 80s cover band. But trust me, just show up Saturday night, start making your connections, and Corey and Wally and Kyle will all take care of you and get you there. Anything to add there, guys?
No, I think you covered it. Yeah,
excellent.
Everything.
All right, excellent. Well, let's get to this week's predictions then.
Cheesehead Radio, Packer Game Predictions.
Well, lost in all this fun, we got a game to play among all this
throwback weekend. Packers,
we're
I don't 5-0. Know.
We got to
they're
play.
5-0.
We got to play more games?
Yeah. You know, you got to have a reason for me either to be on the cliff or off. But anyway,
okay.
Taking on the San Diego Chargers here at home, throwback uniforms, be a fun game to be at in person or watch on TV. How is this game going to turn out? We're going to start with Miss Jamie Snowden.
I had Packers 24, Chargers 13, but I'm going to change it to Packers 28, Chargers 13. Aaron Rodgers tends to bounce back a little bit better after he has an off game. And I'm only giving the Chargers 13 points. They look and the Vikings held them to 14, and I feel that the Packers should hold them to less points than the Vikings did. So 28-13 Packers, 6-0 into the bye week.
All right. Next up, we'll go over to John Rahor. John is not here tonight. He is modeling Halloween costumes, I believe, tonight. It's kind of something he does in his off time. He sent us his Packers picks, though, and he's going to say Packers 27 and Chargers 24. Another close game. Next up, we'll go over to Jersey Al Bracco.
Like Jamie, I just upped my Packers score a few points. just talking about it and thinking about it some more and doing a quick search and seeing that the Chargers are 23rd in points allowed in the league. Packers are third best, by the way. So I think, yeah, there'll be a lot more opportunities for Aaron Rodgers. And who knows, we might even have a deep threat this game. So I'm going Packers 30, Chargers 16.
Do you guys ever, you know, because we don't really look at the scores until we're actually ready to, and we kind of see them for the first time. Do you find yourself looking at a barometer of the other people's scores and kind of jack them up a little bit or down before you actually say it? Do you do that?
No, not based on other people's scores. Usually
okay.
Based on, like, our conversation, like tonight.
I just want to know if it was peer pressure.
Well,
peer
I
pressure?
Usually have to fix mine because, like, tonight mine said Chargers 6, Packers 0. So, yes, I do have to change my score before I read it.
I did put it in the right way, by the way. So,
all right. And my name is CeeDee Angeli, and I was the one who had 30 points first. I just want everyone to know that.
Is that why you're saying that? You think I'm copying you? Oh,
yes.
You want me to change it?
Hey, you know, I'm going to put
upset?
What do the Lombardi and Benici, what do they call each other in Italian?
Paisans.
Yeah, so two Italian guys, we can do that too. Anyway.
Remember, it's 5-0.
Yes, 5-0. Packers,
but if you're wrong,
Chargers,
it's your fault.
Hey, I'll take it. I'm already on the cliff, so, you know, what are you going to do?
All right.
Well, thank you all so much for joining us tonight on Chiefshead Radio, and a special thank you again to Roger Dyer for joining us. Make sure to head on over to PackersTalk.com to get all of the podcasts. Please follow at PackersTalkNet on Twitter and like the Packers Talk Network page on Facebook. Chiefshead Radio and all of the Packers Talk podcasts are available on iTunes. Just Google Packers Talk iTunes and you'll find it. Be sure to subscribe and leave us a review if you can. You can also listen in by using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, or your favorite podcasting app and search for Packers Talk. If you're on Facebook, please like our Packers Talk page and also look for the Packers Peace Group. It's a private group, but if you request to be added and you listen to this show, you're in. Finally, a special shout-out. Please be sure to support our sponsors, Mayfield Sports Marketing, at Mayfield Sport on Twitter, and Waukesha Sports Cards, at Walk Sports. They do amazing things for us, so give them some love.
And we have a new YouTube channel.
Check that out.
Go to YouTube, type in Packers Talk. You can get all of our podcasts live right over YouTube, and that's kind of a fun deal, so definitely do that. Hey, we're 5-0.
Undefeated.
Soon to be 6-0.
Soon to be 6-0 and taking a week off. So until next time, it's Cheesehead Radio. Go Pack Go. Good night, everyone.
Good night,
all. Go Pack Go.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packer. Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signings.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.